You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning, I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. Morning, Mort.
Morning, mate.
So, yeah, the stories. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine, thank you. Right. Yeah, yourself?
Yeah, I'm fine. You're wearing a jumper, though.
I'm cold, man.
I know, but it'll be warm in here.
Ridiculous.
Okay. Okay, I'm just saying that the temperature changes quite a bit.
I'm telling you.
You'll have to divest yourself of various garments as time goes on.
You're in a lovely T-shirt, you.
I like a T-shirt.
Summer weather.
It is ostensibly summer, yeah. I do like the phrase, divest yourself of your garments. Which sounds, I don't know, it sounds like an order, but it's not. Now, Rio Ferdinand has done this big interview. He looks very serious, Rio. You know, he always got quite a serious, furrowed... You'd imagine when he's 70, he'll have a very furrowed brow.
Okay.
Not that it bothers me. I'm absolutely fine with that. But he was talking about various things in this interview, one of which was about Frank Lampard and whether he should be the next Chelsea manager. The word is that Maurizio Sarri will be off to Juve in the next week, and then talks are taking place and Frank will become the new Chelsea manager. All right. First of all, is he ready?
There's no way of knowing. Absolutely no. You'll know a month into it. There's absolutely no way of knowing. He's had a good year, very, very good year at Derby. There's no dispute now. Heartbreak at the end, losing in the final. But this is a different kettle of fish.
This
isn't Derby. I don't think he's ready.
All right. I mean...
I don't know, to be honest.
No, I don't know either. I mean, my feeling is that Frank's a bright guy.
Yeah.
He knows what he's about. He obviously understands the culture of the club.
Yep.
He gets it. He will have respect from the players to a point, right? For the first time, he walks in the dressing room and they'll go, Frank Lampard, Champions League winner, multiple league title winner, FA Cup, all the rest of it. How long does that last in the dressing room?
Well, until you disappoint or upset them, I suppose. Or if you're not a good coach. The only people that sort a manager out are the players. If the training isn't great, if they get a sense that this manager isn't great, it's very difficult for them to hide it. And we live in an era where social media comes in and then all these whispers start. Do you know what I mean? And whereas as a player in the past, you'd hear about them, but very rarely. But
you could ignore them.
You could ignore them. Now, I mean, it's an exciting thing. He's come from absolutely nowhere. But because he's a big name, because he's Frank Lampard, you know, Frank Lampard's Derby. His name comes before the football club. It's the weirdest thing. That's how big he was.
Yeah, it's top billing. It's like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Exactly.
That sort of nonsense.
He's destined. He's destined to be Chelsea's manager. Okay, then give them what they want and see how it goes. But you just have no clue. You have no... Because there's a lot going on at Chelsea. If Sarri goes, you forget. Age inside, especially up front. Two young kids injured who I think were going to be somewhat of the engine room. Lost Hazard. Pulisic is coming in. I mean, that'd be difficult for him anyway. New manager, complete new situation.
They've got some talent, haven't they?
They've got some talent, but, you know, I tend to think it takes someone with a little bit of experience or at least great communication. Great communication and humility to be able to put that together.
Well, I think Frank can communicate. Yeah. I do think he's got humility as well. What he definitely doesn't have is experience. And it strikes me that experience does matter. I mean, when you look at the managers at the top of the Premier League, they're all about, 7-8 years older than Frank, aren't they? I mean, maybe even older than that. Klopp is, 50? Yeah. I think Guardiola's getting on for that. Pochettino's 45, 46.
That's for me. Everyone keeps talking about, you know, experience. Experience of what? I mean, he's got great experience. He's worked with some of the best managers.
Experience of coaching.
That's the thing.
Coaching experience. Purely that. Essentially,
that's the thing. Exactly.
Essentially, 500 games under his belt. Where it's on occasion, it's all gone horribly wrong.
Exactly.
And then you go, now, what did I do wrong there? Oh, yeah, I did that. I'll change it next time. He hasn't got that. He's had one season at Derby.
And the thing about it is at Derby, there's half a dozen occasions where he's gone under the radar. At Chelsea, that is not going to happen.
No, microscope is going to be on him.
And he's got a chairman who, as much as he loves him, he may love Lampard. Listen, right, this is a results business. So... he will have credit in the bank for so long. Then, because if the team aren't playing good football, the reason Sarri went was because or is on his way, And the Chelsea fans haven't been convinced because they haven't liked the way he's played his football.
Yeah.
Lampard's going to go and play great football. Fantastic. If he's not winning football, ultimately, the team's got to be successful.
I mean, it is interesting seeing what's happened at Manchester United, right?
Exactly.
That when Solskjaer came in, and obviously he had a great start, yeah. But that credit in the bank has... Now we got to the end of the season. Everyone knows the scale of the task at Man United. And we have been sat here saying, if he struggles for 6-7 games and it's got to November and they're halfway down the table, it's possible they'll sack him. It is possible they'll sack him.
Of course it is.
And this is a Man United legend who scored the winning goal for them in the Champions League final. The same could happen to Frank if things don't go well.
Of course it could. You know what? Luck and good fortune and good contacts and good name can get you a job. I'm not so sure how long it can keep you in a job if you're not performing. If the team is... Because sometimes some managers go to clubs, some players go to clubs, and it just doesn't work. And you cannot put a finger on why it hasn't worked.
But you can't... with Chelsea and Frank Lampard, I mean, this is... They're made for each other to a certain extent.
In theory.
This is a guy, like I say, he's a Chelsea legend, knows the club. Shouldn't, by the way, a young English manager be encouraged as well?
Yes, definitely.
I think it's a positive thing. We've been complaining for quite a long time. The top of the Premier League, the main jobs, managerial jobs, are foreigners, right? Top six are all foreign guys.
It's not, for me, whenever I listen to managers talking after the game, the saddest thing for me is that it's very few English managers. It's all foreign managers. Yes, we've learned from them.
Further down, there are.
No. In the Premier League, I'm talking about, after the Premier League games, majority of managers in there's one or two that are English. And for me, I want some young English managers, black, white, green, blue, English managers, because there are a lot of good players who want to become managers, but see that bottleneck. And that bottleneck is there's a lot of foreign managers coming into the country, and it's because they're foreign for some odd reason. You know, we've got reserve team managers from Germany coming in who seem to be better lauded than our experienced managers.
You know what?
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, to a certain extent, that's a separate argument.
But it is.
But I understand the point you're making, but I quite like the fact that if Frank does go in, it's an English guy getting a chance at a top six club, which rarely happens.
Well, it doesn't happen, which I think is a good thing. And Harry, I'd love him to do well.
Harry Redknapp might have been the last one at Spurs. Being an English manager, managing a top four, top six club.
But the thing about it was, he got them up there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think they were a top four, five, six club. He, with Gareth Bale and all that, got them up there. But this would be good. I'm really, if it does happen for Lampard, because what I like about him is he seems to know how to do things the right way. You know, there's no issues with him. He just gets on with it. And he's relatable as well. He's relatable.
I think a lot of people are going to be watching this very, very closely.
Hoping he does well.
Not least Steven Gerrard at Rangers, I imagine, who obviously will be talked of in the same bracket. And we go, okay, he's done well. I want the Liverpool job when Klopp moves on. And I'm sure they're thinking about it as well. Also, whether he'll take Jody Morris with him.
Oh, he'd have to.
I imagine he would.
Jody Morris is more important. It sounds really weird. Jody Morris is more important than Frank Lampard. He is. Because if this ban comes in, there'll be all of those players will be players that Jody Morris knows very, very well because he'll have developed them.
Yeah.
And they will play for him. So Jody Morris becomes just as important as Frank Lampard.
This is Love Sport.
It's quite a sad story about Robin Smith, the ex-England batsman, one of the most popular cricketers to play the game, affectionately known as the Judge. And he's 55 years old. He's revealed he contemplated taking his own life 5 years ago. He struggled with retirement after a long career, had alcohol issues. His son, Harrison, and partner, Karen, saved him. And he's now flourishing in Perth. And there's also, by the way, a piece in the Times, I think, Michael Clark talking about his mental health issues. Cricket obviously has a problem, but this is not. I mean, it's not just cricket. We've had the footballers the other week. We've had the programme with Prince Charles.
Yeah.
Prince William. Yeah. We also had the golfers. I think Thomas Bjorn has written a book about some issues. This is a common problem, isn't it?
Of course it is, because what the things, as you're talking, the things that you read are identity, structure, man's man, acceptance, and often what comes in it also is the link is a breakup of a marriage as well. Those things seem to always happen. Structure. If you look at structure, he was saying, I work so hard at visualising bowling, visualise exactly what I'm going to... This is day after day, week after week. You're in this environment, you're in this bubble with the same people, time after time, day after day, and it's a structured environment where you look forward to going in, you look forward to training and playing and being successful and all, everything that comes with that. And then imagine tomorrow, that's gone. So all of your worth that's linked to that identity being a cricketer is gone completely.
Yeah, but don't they realise, don't people, and it's a lot of men here, but I'm sure women obviously suffer from this stuff as well, but we're talking about men in particularly in competitive sports environment. Don't they realise that you're not defined by who you are as a cricketer or a footballer?
No,
or,
you are. No, well, you no, you are. You consider...
Only in your head, though.
In your head, but if you consider, he'll have started playing cricket. He said, you know, I've read it. His dad used to wake him up at 5 o'clock in the morning when he was 10. And so from there onwards, this is what he's known. This is what he is. This is what you do. And it's a message.
We should get him in here.
Yeah, we tell
5 o'clock in the morning. Jesus. Well, if he's up, we might as well come in.
May as well. It's drip fed into you. And that is all you know. And what you're being conditioned in is to recognise that is all I'm worth. Now, I've spoken to young players and talked to them about, I'm talking about academy players plus young pros. How's your day been today? Oh, it's been terrible. Why? You know, I feel really down. Why? Oh, I trained really badly. How long did you train for? 90 minutes. So your day is defined by that 90 minutes. That is where they are at the moment. If they have a bad couple of days training, life's at an end. And it's trying to get people to realise that there is life before, during and after whatever sport they're in.
Yeah.
They have to be able to understand what real life is, because they don't. Because everything is done for them and they're in an environment where they've only got to focus on this, on the sport.
I mean, all the stuff that's coming out recently, Danny Rose talking about his depression, how he wanted to stop playing. There's a piece, Jack Wilshere is in the papers this morning saying he didn't work hard enough on recovery from injury, but it was because his son was having seizures and he wasn't sleeping and he thought, what does it matter about me? I don't care about any of this. Michael Clarke, the batsman, the Australian batsman.
Very successful.
Very successful.
Ex-captain.
And he said, telling people to harden up isn't going to help. One can imagine in an Australian dressing room, especially an Australian sporting dressing room, there's not a lot of sympathy for this sort of
stuff. None whatsoever.
One imagines. I mean, not now.
When he was doing it, when he started, remember that great side Michael Clarke must have come into?
Yeah.
Man's side. Hard drinking, the sledging, all of that. Toughen up. Man. How could you go in there? And say, in fact, who would you turn to say, I am struggling. I'm finding it difficult to cope. This is when they're at the top of their game. You know, people will look and go, what have you got to complain about? You're beating everyone.
Yeah, but that's always a stupid thing. I always think, what a stupid thing. It's like people who've got lots of money. Say, well, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Well, just because you've got lots of money.
It's irrelevant.
I'd hope that those attitudes would change. When we've heard from professional footballers making 40, 50, 60 grand a week, that they're depressed and they can't get up in the morning and it's a struggle for them. And then hopefully people will read those stories and go, Oh, it's just like it is for us.
Well, the problem that you have is, I mean, I listen to so many people say, yeah, but, you know, if that was me, no, it's not you. Because when people say that, they're only seeing it through their eyes. They can't, until they can see it through someone else's eyes and empathise, the first couple of things they say will tell me whether it's worth listening to them or not. Because they're talking about themselves. No, this is about this guy who's struggling. You can't, because what you're trying to attach to it is your life. Your life's irrelevant. We're talking
about
them. Odds.
But it's also about the pressure. I don't, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of people used to talk about comedians and say, oh yeah, they're very depressive. I never noticed particularly amongst comedians that sort of depression thing.
Yeah.
You know, tortured clown and all that. I thought it was a bit of a cliche. The truth is though, certainly in the last couple of years, on the Facebook groups that we have, you know, the WhatsApp groups where we talk to each other, there has been a bit more of an admittance, that self-confidence thing, that self-esteem thing. Only really in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Not so much before that. Maybe when you're sitting in a room with two or three of your closest mates, you might talk about that. But in general, people are just expected to get on with it.
Men don't do it. When you talk to footballers, okay, and I've done educational work with footballers, and where I get them is I say, look, you know, you are drip-fed a certain way, conditioned to behave a certain way. Your reactions and responses make up four or five different things. It's things like humour. Footballers use humour a hell of a lot. Banter, humour, bravado, disinterest, silence, things like that. Defiance. Yeah. They're the five things footballers use. And what they're saying to you when they use those is, I'm a little bit uncomfortable about this. I don't know how to articulate that without looking like an idiot or looking weak in front of my mates. So I'm going to do this instead. Something genuinely serious, I'm going to crack a joke about. That's what they do. That's how they deal in a male football environment with things that are difficult. They never face it head on because they don't know how to.
You wonder if it's the same in women's sport, by the way. You would hope that they would be a bit more caring about each other because they generally are, aren't they?
Well,
really?
I
don't know, though.
Well, I ran
know.
Women's football at Chant for 5 years, and I found it difficult initially. But then you start to understand the mentality, and a lot of the women that I worked with were conditioned to accept that they were second best. I remember I was at a football club saying to every player, man, you any good? And she went, no. She's playing at elite football, good player. No. 15 minutes later, she kind of explained why. Every message that had been sent to her made her think that she was substandard. And that's what she accepted. That's not every woman, but that and what I found. I can remember going to a football club. Man City, I think it was one of the football clubs there. Where and what had happened? I think it was Man City. We were talking about sexism. Guy on the gate, the old guy who walks, is makes sexist comments all the time to them. And I said, "What do you do about it?" And they all said, "Went quiet." And I went, "Hold on. You've got a bit of power in here. You're an England international. You've got 70 caps. You are powerful. What is stopping you from actually getting together and going, I'm not having that?"
Yeah.
And they were frightened to do it. These are experienced football players who, it's their environment, were frightened to do it. So the mentality is slightly different. But it all leads to the same place. That self-doubt, the emotional anguish that they feel. And they need what needs to happen is there need to be safe spaces to be able to explore that within the football environment. And that is what is becoming evident now. They're beginning to find places where they can actually feel free and comfortable to talk about it.
Love sport. And let's have a little chat about cricket. The World Cup is continuing. And the Australian manufacturer of Zing Bales have defended their product after they've failed to dislodge five times in the first 10 days of the Cricket World Cup. One man who doesn't agree with this is our next guest, the cricket legend, David Bumble Lloyd. Good morning, David.
Good morning, lads.
Morning. Nice. Thanks for joining us. It's damaging for cricket, isn't it, when the bales don't dislodge like they should?
Yeah, they just need modifying. I think it's a great gimmick. It looks brilliant at night time.
With
it
the
really
lights.
Does.
Yeah.
Mm. And under lights and T20 cricket and all the razzmatazz. So, looking from afar, I would say that the grooves are too deep. And so what they need to do, it's not the zing bales, it's actually the stumps. And they probably need to just modify the stumps, unless they already have done, and just make the grooves a little bit shallower. So that they don't actually sit in.
You know, I mean, with things like this, you often think there's going to be some form of road testing, you know, and I don't know how they do it, because for it to happen five times, it must be very rare in one tournament.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch worldwide T20, it's a rarity. I mean, we've had zing bales for some time, and there's been isolated incidents, but What it would suggest to me, as I say, I'm looking from outside, that for a World Cup, let's have some brand new stumps, let's have brand new this, and it might just be that the grooves are a bit too deep.
Yeah.
Well, they obviously are.
Yeah.
I mean, the ball's clattering into the stumps and the bales aren't coming off.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does seem, and you would have thought they would have tested it beforehand, but we do like the bales lighting up. I wanted to ask you also about the lack of reserve days as well. We've lost a couple of games to the rain. Now, the weather forecast is pretty good for the next couple of weeks, but what are your feelings? Should they have elongated the tournament by a few days and had a few reserve days?
No, it's long enough as it is. It's just the vagaries of the weather. It's tough, you're unlucky. Probably unseasonal in England at the minute. If you look back to last year, I mean, it was absolutely scorching at this time. And so you just look at it, logistics of booking hotels, getting personnel from A to B. It's long enough as it is. You just take pot luck, mate. I know that somebody's come out, and Bangladesh have come out and said, well, it should be this, it should be that. That's fine. If you're on the receiving end, it's tough. But, crikey, we've had rain in cricket since Methuselah started. So it's just, you're just unlucky.
It was a good opener, wasn't it, Methuselah as well? Yeah. He used to stay in for ages.
Patient.
He was like watching a fire go out with that ball.
Yeah, quite. How have you felt about England's tournament so far? I mean, they started well, and then a bit of a lapse against Pakistan.
Well, we've just beaten Pakistan in a series, and Pakistan had a great day against England. England are the best team in the tournament. There's no getting away from that. Whether they're going to win it is something else, but they are the best team in the tournament. And there are some wonderful teams, there really are. So I thought the last game against Bangladesh at Cardiff, I thought that's a real tricky game for England, but they played so well. They got everything covered. They bat deep. They play with no fear. They've got some devastating players. Are they going to win it? You can't say who's going to win it, because in 50-over cricket on the day, if you have a lapse, if you have a stinker, you're out the game.
Yeah.
And so England need a consistency, which they've had for a long, long time. Continue with that consistency and you're going to get real close.
I think what's also different, David, is it's in your home nation, you are favourites, the pressure's on you, managing that kind of expectation to win, because people are, as you've just said, they're the best team in it. Can they deal with that kind of pressure? Can they deal with the expectation that might be unrealistic from some?
Well, I know these lads, I know every one of them, and I know them quite well, and they'll deal with anything. What they'll have to deal with later on is that although we're at home, it won't be home crowds. When you come up against the Asian teams, India, if we get into Pakistan again or any of the other nations, they will have the main body of spectators.
Yeah.
And they're as mad as actors. I mean, once they get going, they're fanatics. You go to India, there's nothing else. They go to the pictures. They go and watch the pictures. I don't go to the pictures. I can't sit forever.
Right.
I can't sit down and watch him film. But that's what... It's cricket, cricket, cricket. Whereas in England, it's a good game. It's a lovely game, cricket. Whereas our like main passion sport is football. But you'll have your time in cricket in a World Cup because it's special. But make no mistake, when England come up against India, you'll think you're playing in Mumbai.
Yeah, yeah, except for the weather.
except for the weather. And the stadium will be better over here.
Yeah, and the beer will be much more expensive as well here. But the legacy, I wanted to talk about the legacy of the World Cup, because obviously it's not on terrestrial TV, it's on satellite TV. Do you think it's a shame that the wider audience is not getting to see it?
No, I don't at all. Put your hand in your pocket, terrestrial television. They wouldn't touch cricket with a barge pole. So, you know, why do they start now?
I think Channel 4 have got it.
If you want cricket, put your hand in your pocket and bid for it. They don't bid for it. End of.
Channel 4 have got it, but it's at stupid o'clock. It's almost midnight.
Yeah, it's unfortunate they're showing highlights late on at night. I'm just saying that if England do go far in this World Cup, it is a shame that people aren't getting to see it, is it not?
Well, I think there's millions watching it. Let me tell you, there were 9 million applications for tickets.
Yeah.
9 million. It's an empty argument. You've got to deal with it. If you want it on terrestrial, they've got to bid for it.
Thank you, David. It's very nice to speak to you. Enjoy the games today.
Yeah, well, he'd be rained off, won't it?
Well, so you pop to the cinema, maybe. No, you're not keen. David, it's lovely to speak to you. David Bumble Lloyd there. Fabulous, fabulous. Talking about the Cricket World Cup, which continues today and for about the next 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
This is Love Sport.
Paris has come in. He's got some stories from inside the newspapers. Good morning, Paris.
Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Morning.
May Day for the Planet is a story in The Sun today. Theresa May has said that...
She's still about.
She's still there.
Like a ghost.
They can't get rid of it.
It's like a ghost.
Avram Grant.
She's Avram Grant. She's the Avram Grant of politics.
She's picking up bibs and cones.
but while doing
that... Put the cones out, Theresa. What you got?
She said that Britain will commit today to going carbon neutral by 2050, despite huge concerns over the costs. So, in essence, legislation...
2050. Won't Norfolk be underwater by then?
I think so.
Right.
I think
some people might say that's not a loss, but I like it down there. I genuinely do. I do. It's not flat.
Is this really going to bother me?
It's not flat. It's gently undulating, as we say.
Is this going to really bother me and you?
Well, I do. Listen, I've had a holiday on the Broads. I'm pottering about near Potter Heigham.
But it's 2050.
2050. Well, yeah, Paris.
That's what I'm saying.
Paris. Yeah. Should I have brought stories in about the 1970s?
You're on your own, mate. That's all I'm saying. Is it really going to bother us?
Well, I get the point you're making, but anyway, by 2050,
I'll still be about.
We're going to be carbon neutral.
Yeah, it would be. The idea is to make the UK the first G7 country to hit a net zero emissions target.
I mean, the thing is, we are trying to get. I think last year was, or last a few months ago, was one of the first weeks where we haven't used any coal to make the electricity. Oh, so really? We are trying to make these things better. Yeah. But, you know, whether we actually... 2050, it seems like a long way away.
It does.
Doesn't it? But these things do take a bit of time. The sentiment is laudable. Whether we manage it, I don't know.
I mean, because we're such a small island, so to speak...
But a big economy, though.
When the seas are rising, the economy doesn't matter, I suppose. But is it going to make that big a difference considering what the USA are doing or what China are doing?
I think, you know what?
Do you have to have someone say, okay, well, I'll be the first, you follow me?
I think that's the only way to be. You cannot be going, well, until USA and China sort out, what's the point of us doing anything? You have to set an example. And it might cost us a bit of money, but at least we can feel virtuous. And hopefully we won't have a load of kids, you know, bunging up the bridges. Because at least we're doing our bit. You know,
high ground while the high ground disappears.
While the high ground is not underwater. I think that is a fair point, and I don't see this as a bad thing. I mean, why not? I mean, I heard that Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister, saying that they're not going to go, their economy is no longer going to be based around growth. Now, there are plenty of economic arguments about whether that's a good or bad thing, but I think it's good that they've done that, and I think it's good that we're doing this. That's my feeling.
Now, is your job taking over your life?
Yep.
Right, well, that's a quick answer.
There you go. Next.
Basically.
Is this just a questionnaire now?
Yes, we'll just pop through.
Is this job taking over your life?
A little bit. A little bit.
Right. You know what? We get a bit of spare time.
A little bit.
Yeah.
About three out of five Brits want to work less, a survey found.
Only three out of five?
When you see that, you think, well, hang on a second, surely everyone wants to work less. But they're kind of saying that nearly one in four are basically spending an extra 10 hours in work a week.
Then when?
Well, right? then they should be. So that
everyone does that. Yeah, yeah, you spend out of hours work.
Many people admit their job causes disruption to family life, as well as making them feel exhausted and under excessive pressure.
Yeah, well, it's hard out there. People have to earn a lot of money, and they have to keep chugging along, and they're working long hours.
Some people do it not for a lot of money either.
Yeah, they do.
You know, and
they're under
huge pressure.
Yeah. What is this money you speak of?
Well,
on the poverty line, some people on the poverty line, you see, you know, in schools where the teachers have food banks.
No, it's not great.
It's grim.
Paris is in rags. It's really upsetting.
He's singing about picking a pocket or two, isn't he?
He came in this morning, he went, please, sir, can I have some more? I'm going to walk around the streets with him later on. Young boy. 7 guineas. How much? There or thereabouts. Anyway.
Yeah. Reminds me of the last time I came in here and you compared me to Harry Seacole.
I did, actually. There is an Oliver thing going on. I am sorry about
that. That's all right.
What?
The Dickens character.
God bless Harry Seacole. anyway, it is. Listen, people are struggling. It's a struggle out there. There's no doubt about it. Austerity, whatever the cause is, it's hard. And, yeah, what are we meant to do about this? Sorry, that people want to work less.
People want to work less. So
4-day week. Why not a 4-day week?
Not financially possible. No, that's the problem.
Yeah, no, but if we decide... you say it's not financially possible. Why can't people do a 4-day week? Or would we not... Would we?
Because people will say, we'll pay you for the 4 days. We'll pay you less then.
Yeah, but would we not be competitive in the world? Is that what this is about? Surely we have to... Listen, sorry, can I just say...
Yeah, go on.
100 years ago, people worked 6.5 days a week, right? That's what they did. They had a half day on a Sunday or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Then it came down to 6 days. Then it came down to 5.
Yeah.
There's no earthly reason why it can't come down to 4.
Money.
Yeah, but you would have said that at 6.5 days.
Well, no. The
wouldn't
problem,
they?
I understand that, but back in that day, I'm virtually sure that the pay that you were given... kind of helped you and was enough for you to live on.
What, now lived in massive poverty.
Hold on. Now you've got people getting paid, but the bills are greater. You're under pressure. You're working. You look at people who, for example, have children and put them in childcare. They're working for the childcare.
Yeah.
There is nothing you can do. Take a couple of quid and go out for the evening. You can't do it.
Yeah, it's harder now. There's
it's
no
harder
doubt.
Now.
It does seem that way. And rents are expensive and mortgages are expensive.
So you may have to pick a pocket or two.
We get that.
We're not advocating picking pockets.
We're not.
No, we're not.
Just wanted to confirm that fact.
We have gang of urchins here who we send out a love sport every morning.
Yeah. Well, how are we still on air? That's how. That is how. Google is apparently testing a feature that warns taxi passengers if they are taken off the fastest route by unscrupulous drivers. So basically, if you're in a taxi, if you're going, well, hang on, this isn't the usual route, or this isn't the quickest route. So if you like, if you know your way around
London,
does
that still happen? I mean, I don't know. Maybe to a certain extent, it's about what you sound like when you get in. If I get in a cab and I go, take us down to wherever, North London, and they know that I'm from London, and they know I'm going to know. Whereas if you get in with a foreign accent or you can barely speak English and you say, please take us to Heathrow, and they take you via Gatwick, you know, that sort of nonsense. And I guess it does still go on, but taxi drivers always say to me that they don't do that because why would they do that? And I go, well, because of money, mate. That's why. To earn more money. Anyway, there's now an app that says we'll catch them out.
Yeah, well, it's a service in Google Maps that alerts passengers when their driver has gone off course by 500 metres. It could enable passengers to avoid being ripped off or potentially being abducted or assaulted, is what they're saying.
Do you know what? Why not? It sounds like a good idea.
I think it's a great idea.
Fair enough. Right. We'll move on from that then.
Yeah, let's do that. Nothing funny to say about that.
Nothing
that is
funny.
A good thing.
No, that's a good thing. We'll move on to the next thing. Now, we're not the only species who mood sinks when love goes awry. So if something goes wrong, like you've had relationships that maybe not worked out, it brings you down a little bit. Apparently...
Should we have some sad music here? I definitely think we should have the Simon Bates. Anyway, go on.
Apparently, female chinchillids, a small fish from South America...
Chinchillids?
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
Well, that's what I'm saying they're called.
Chichilids.
I mean, I haven't checked the pronunciation with the Love Sport Pronunciation Service.
It sounded like you hesitated. They're called chillids, but you went, you just started.
Anyway!
Chichilids.
What's wrong with you?
They become,
bless you.
What is wrong with you?
What about them?
They become pessimistic when kept away from their first choice mate and made instead to endure a kind of forced marriage to a lesser male, research has shown.
How do you know when a chichilid is pessimistic? I can't see any point. I might as well go and spawn and then die. I don't understand it. Oh, the fish looks a bit depressed. How can you tell? Is that what I'm asking? Well,
as therapy,
isn't that a perfectly valid question?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, basically, they've done a bit of research. Basically, they've tried to find out what makes the fish happy. So they put food in a box, see how they react to that, and put another box down. And basically say, well, okay, they've reacted poorly to the box that hasn't got any food in.
Yeah.
Therefore, that is... them showing signs
may
of
I just
displeasure.
Ask one question, why
science, Paul, for the advancement of scientific knowledge.
Yeah, okay. And okay, so basically we found out that chichilids are they get a bit depressed if they can't mate with the right fish, is that right?
Yeah,
right, with the good looking the fish that they like,
and they're forced into a relationship with one that they don't like.
What's this got to do with us? Because we know that happens with humans.
Well, it's just we're not the only ones.
We're not alone in feeling depressed.
So we're spending all this money on the outcome that we're not alone in feeling depressed.
Essentially.
So is it not soothing to know that you're not alone?
I think
sometimes?
It is. I think to a
just
certain
don't
extent.
Care.
If you're in the lounge and she says, I'm leaving you, and you go, I'm really depressed, said, you're not the only one.